Chapter 3. Sad Days at Limeridge House by Walter Hartwright. I returned to my room with my head full of upsetting thoughts and my heart full of sadness. However, I had not been there for long when there was a knock at the door. It was Miss Halcombe. "Mr. Hartwright," she said, "a letter has just come for Miss Fairley. We don't know who sent it, but it seems to be a horrible attempt to stop the marriage. Miss Fairley is very upset. Although the letter does not name Sir Percival Glyde, there is so much detail in the description that it can only be him. The letter suggests that the baronet should not be trusted, and it warns Miss Fairley not to marry him. Look!" She passed the letter to me. It was written in an unusual style, and the last two sentences particularly caught my eye. "I only want what is best for you. You have a special place in my heart because your mother was my only friend." I remembered what Anne Catherick had said to me about her love for Mrs. Fairley. I wondered, although there was no proof at all, whether the letter could have been written by Anne. "The servants say that the letter was delivered to the house by an old woman who did not say a single word," said Miss Halcombe. That evening, Miss Halcombe and I went to the village and made inquiries, but no one we spoke to had seen anyone unusual. In a final attempt to find information, we decided to ask the school teacher, who we thought must know many people in the village. "Well, something strange did happen today," he told us. "A boy came running into my class and told me he had just seen a ghost. He said he had seen a lady as pale as snow in the graveyard, standing by the white cross." "What nonsense! I told him it must have just been a stranger to the village." When we had left the school, Miss Halcombe told me that the white cross was on Mrs. Fairley's grave. "Can you take me there?" I asked. "I have a suspicion that this ghost is the same person that wrote the letter. In the letter, the writer says that they loved your mother more than anyone else. The ghost by your mother's grave was female and as pale as snow. Those words could describe a woman in white."
"Anne Catherick!"
"Yes, I believe so," I replied. Miss Halcombe showed me where the grave was and then left me to return to her sister. I noticed that one side of the white stone cross seemed to have been recently cleaned. In the distance, I heard footsteps approaching on the stone path, and I quickly ran and hid behind the wall of the church. A moment later, a person came into view. It was a woman wearing a long cloak with the hood pulled up over her head. Her face was partly covered, but I saw some white material beneath the cloak. I watched as she walked towards the white cross, looked nervously all around her, and then knelt down and started to clean the other side of the stone with a cloth. I came out from my hiding place and walked slowly towards her. Suddenly, she looked up at me, her face full of fear. There was no doubt in my mind now. I was looking at the same face I had seen that night in London.
"Don't be frightened," I said. "Do you remember me? We met very late at night, and I helped you to find the way to London."
She relaxed a little and took a deep breath.
"Yes," she said quietly. "You were very kind to me."
"I'm surprised to see you here."
"I came with my good friend from London, an old lady called Mrs. Clements, who has relations here," she told me.
I thought about the old woman who had delivered the mysterious letter.
We've been staying with those relations for 2 days at Todd's farm, she added. Then she turned to look at the white stone. I wanted to come here to visit my dear Mrs. Fairley. Oh, it makes my heart sink to see her gravestone so dirty.
I waited for a moment and then said, I know that you escaped from the asylum. She looked very shocked. I explained what had happened after I had helped her to get into the carriage that night. At first, she seemed terrified, but when I told her that I had kept her secret, she seemed to trust me.
It was a private asylum, but it was still a terrible place, she said nervously.
I'm glad you got out of it, but why were you there? Don't you have parents to take care of you? I asked.
I never knew my father. I suppose he is dead. I have a very bad relationship with my mother, so I don't really see her, but I don't miss her.
Could it have been her mother who had had her locked up in the asylum? I doubted that her mother could afford it. Private asylums were extremely expensive.
You have been staying at Limeridge House, haven't you? She asked suddenly. How is Miss Fairley?
I paused before I spoke, and then I took a chance. Actually, Miss Fairley is not very well this morning. She has read your letter and is very upset. The cloth that the woman had been holding dropped from her hands, and her face suddenly became very pale. It was wrong of you to write that letter, I went on. If you had something important to say, then you should have told her yourself. Come and meet Miss Fairley tomorrow. She is a good person and will treat you well if you tell her the truth. You mentioned no names in the letter, but Miss Fairley knows that you were talking about someone who is coming to visit her at Limeridge next week, Sir Percival Glyde. As soon as I said Sir Percival Glyde, Anne jumped to her feet and gave a shockingly loud scream. She suddenly seemed extremely upset and full of rage and fear. It took a long time to calm her. I returned to Limeridge House and told Miss Halcombe about what had happened. No doubt now remained in my mind. It had not been Anne Catherick's mother who had imprisoned her in the asylum. A man had locked her up, and that man's name was Sir Percival Glyde. But if my suspicions were correct, then what were his reasons? The next morning, I woke with a heavy heart. It was going to be my last day in Limeridge. The post came, and I made my excuses to Mr. Fairley. Although he was unhappy about it, he agreed to end my employment at Limeridge House. Meanwhile, Miss Halcombe set off to Todd's farm to try to find Anne Catherick and look into her connection with the baronet. She soon returned with the news, however, that Mrs. Clements and Miss Catherick had left Cumberland by train very early that morning. Later that morning, an old gentleman, Mr. Gilmore, arrived at the house, and long meetings began between him and Mr. Fairley and Miss Halcombe. While they were discussing family matters, I took my chance to walk around the gardens for the last time. In the evening, I went downstairs for dinner. I had not seen Laura since the previous day, and I was a little nervous. But I need not have worried, because Mr. Gilmore certainly liked to talk. He enthusiastically led the conversation, and the rest of us only needed to listen and agree. After the meal, we went to the drawing room, the room in which the happiest evenings of my life had been passed. Miss Halcombe and Mr. Gilmore sat down together to play cards, while Miss Fairley went to the piano. After sitting there awkwardly for a moment, she suddenly picked up a sheet of music, placed it in front of her, and began to play. It was the same piece by Mozart that she had chosen the first time I heard her play the piano. Oh, how different things were now. I had been so excited and happy when I first heard her play that music. Now I was heartbroken and without hope. Miss Fairley, Miss Halcombe and I finished breakfast together the next morning in silence, knowing that the time for me to return to London had come. When I stood up and began to say goodbye, Miss Fairley hurried out of the room. "Will you write to me?" I asked Miss Halcombe. "Of course. You are a very good man, and you have become a friend to me and to us. I won't forget that, Walter." "If you or Miss Fairley ever need anything, I will always be there for you," I told her. Marion kissed me on the forehead, and then she left the room. I turned away towards the window and tried to calm myself as I looked out at the grey winter's day. Only a minute or so had passed before I heard the door open again. My heart jumped in my chest as I turned around. It was Miss Fairley, and she was walking towards me with something in her hand.
"I only left the room to fetch this. I want you to have it."
She reached out and offered me the picture of a rose that she had been drawing in the summer house the first time that we had met.
"I will miss you so much," she said, and began to cry.
I was afraid to tell her how I really felt. Instead, I said, "I will keep this with me always, until the day I die. I am very grateful that we had this time together. I hope with all my heart that you have a happy life." The tears were running fast down her cheeks now. I held out my hands and she took them, and I also began to cry.
"Oh, this is awful. I am desperate. Please, just leave," she cried.
I knew in that moment that she truly loved me, but that it was all over. She sank into a chair, and I looked at her for the last time, and then left the room.